Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. It is Tuesday, May the 7th, 2013. It's 8 o'clock in the evening, and that means it's time on WDCU Daniel Clark Let's Talk Radio on Blog Talk Radio on the Internet for the Coach Ricky Clark, Coach Joe Ledford Let's Talk Sports Show. Coach Clark, it's good to be back on the air again tonight. I'm looking forward to a good show tonight where we talk a little bit of local stuff and a lot of NBA. I know you've been following those playoffs, and I hate to say it, it seems to me like it's going to be a little bit of a sleeper series. You disagree with me?
It's not going to be a sleeper series, or it depends on which series you're talking about. I know last night Miami went down, but I think that was just preliminaries. I don't think it's going to end that way.
I don't think it is either. And tonight's show is brought to you by the good folks over at Player Sporting Goods. David Butler went by to see him the other day, and he's over there busy getting ready for football and fall soccer and lacrosse and all those fall sports. And, you know, folks, they can provide all your team and individual needs. Ricky, I went over there, and I was just looking at all the different types of baseball gloves and bats that they have. And, you know, bats are a big issue that we run into. You know, what is a legal bat? What is not a legal bat? And I'm going to ask old David Butler to come on this show one night to talk about NSA softball, but also to talk about bats, because, if you remember when you and I were playing baseball, you picked up a wooden bat and away you went, and now they've got about 14 or 15 different types of aluminum bats. I've never seen anything like it in the world.
Well, I think where CMS is going is straight down to safety. They're going to go with whatever the professionals say is the safest, and that's kind of what we're going to go with. For those people that don't play baseball, these athletes this day and time is a lot more athletic than we were coming through. And like Joe just stated, you know, you're talking about a wooden bat. Now, you know, kids show up to the park with their own bat, and we played with what the coach took out of the bag. But they show up to the park with their own bats, and those baseballs get off of those bats pretty fast. You take a 13, 14-year-old kid, most of the time they cannot get out the way of that ball. So it's a safety thing. But it's going to be interesting to see how it ends up. I'm just as confused as you are, Joe, because this year we bought bats, and that I think we did like a .5. You're just swinging it. It just feel like it's way too heavy.
It is plenty heavy. That is a -5, and what that means is, say, a bat is 31 inches long. That means it has to weigh at least 26 ounces in order to satisfy the middle school requirements. Now, you know, Coach, the high school has a -3, but, you know, folks, you can get all your bat questions answered by David Butler and Colt and Denise. If anybody knows bats, it's the good folks over at Player Sporting Goods. It's also amazing how many different types of baseballs they've got over there. But you can contact David at Players at 704-598-7966, or you can go online, get up with Ashley, who handles all of Players' online orders at www.playersls.com. And, of course, feel free to call into this show tonight on that Player Sporting Goods call-in guest line. That call-in number is 888-689-4061. And, Ricky, we do have a few high school announcements to make. The state baseball playoffs have not started just yet, but we do have a little bit of excitement going on over in the IMEC conference, where for two nights in a row, Mallard Creek and Hopewell have been rained out. Now, that's for the championship of the IMEC. It's being played up at North Mecklenburg. The Southwestern 4A, that tournament is over. And in that tournament, South Mecklenburg beat Providence 8-2. And that's a pretty exciting time, because generally you kind of look for Ardrey Cale, you kind of look for Providence to win that tournament. And, you know, when Coach Bagwell left South Mecklenburg to go down to Ardrey Cale, everybody said, well, that's the end of South Mecklenburg baseball. But the Sabres are back in the conference championship again, beating Providence last night by a score of 8-2. And in softball, get ready for this score, Coach. In the Southwestern 4A final, Ardrey Cale beat Independence 18-7. That was actually a pretty close game. It was 2-1 at the end of one, and then the next thing you know, it's 6-3, and then all of a sudden, it's it's 15-7, and so it sounds like that game got out of hand pretty quick. A sport that we don't talk a whole lot about, but I think we should, is the Southwestern 4A West, or the Western Golf Regional, has been conducted. Myers Park finished with the low score at 285, followed by Huff at 287. Ardrey Kell was at 312, and then Providence at 312. Now, those were the teams earning the state. You know, and Providence wins the state for a tiebreaker. Then South Caldwell at 329, Lake Norman at 332, East Gaston 341, McDowell 343, and Mooresville 345. Now, Coach Clark, I'm just going to give it to you straight. If I went out and played 18 holes today, I might shoot a 300, because it has been a long time since I have got out and struck the golf ball.
I'd shoot 1,000. Me and my golf game. But I talked to a good friend of both of ours this week, Wayne Lauder. And Wayne has promised me that, you know, anytime I ring his phone this summer, he's going to grab his bag and come out and try to help me fix my golf game. So I'm going to hold him to that, and I'd be ecstatic if you could join us. That would be fun.
And, you know, I'd be happy to do that, Coach. And when you talk about Wayne Lauder, of course, he's a longtime football, whatever coach. I think Wayne's coached every sport known to man over at Coolwood. I think he was there in about 1902 when they opened the school. And he's not quite that old, but, you know, he retired from his teaching position and has been spending his time as the athletic director. And Coach, have you ever known a more quality person? And what a great gentleman Wayne is. And he's given his entire adult life to what originated as junior high school, 7, 8, 9, but more recently, 6th graders, 8th graders, and 9th graders over at Coolwood. I mean, what a genuinely good human being. And I'd love to be on the golf course with Wayne, and we need to get him on this show and let him talk about some of his experiences, because I honestly think he's been doing it longer than you or me, which is hard to imagine because we've been doing it for quite a while ourselves.
Yeah, we started a conversation a couple of weeks ago, Wayne and I, and turned out that Wayne, what Coach Lauder, he coached Randy Bolton, a friend of mine, when Randy was in middle school, well, back then it was junior high. When Randy was in junior high, and he remembers Randy, and I told Wayne then, I said, you know what, I can remember the name, but at 57, I can barely remember faces, but he remembered Randy like it was yesterday. And you know, I asked Randy to get by and talk with him. He and I started a conversation about, we were talking about softball, you know, and, you know, both of us was trying to figure out, well, you know, when they went from slow pitch to fast pitch, it's like the power struggle over. Now it boils down to who has the best pitchers. And back when it was slow pitch softball, that position was more of, you know, who has a good glove, whose pitcher can hit those quick grounders, can catch those quick grounders and throw them to first, second, or third. It wasn't a pitching duel at all. And, you know, and I agree with him. You know, both of us agree that going to fast pitch hurt a lot of schools. It didn't help them at all. And I think James Martin is one of those schools where, you know, everybody else is fast pitching. Well, not everybody else is fast pitching, but most of the schools that come out of the northern end of the county that we're playing, they're fast pitching the ball. We're still slow pitching. We're using the fast pitch technique, but we're basically still slow pitching, and they're hitting rockets off of us. And I was trying to remember, and Wayne couldn't remember either, you know, how it all came about and whose idea was it. Why did they feel like it was better to go to a fast pitch over a slow pitch? And did they really think about how it would impact the inner city schools? What are your thoughts on that, Joe?
Well, Coach, you know, my daughter Megan was one of the first to transition from slow pitch to fast pitch. And, you know, you're exactly right there. I mean, it was always about balls and strikes because, you know, in slow pitch, you do see walks, but they're not regular. But when Megan was playing slow pitch softball, they had 10 players playing defense. They had a fourth outfielder. They called it the short fielder, but it really they split center field between right center and left center. So you got to get an extra kid playing the game, and it was more of a hitter's game at that point. It was a hitting and fielding game, and you're right. Since they went to fast pitch, and one of the primary reasons that they did was because the colleges were playing fast pitch softball, and the idea was that if you wanted to get, you know, young ladies ready to play college ball, then the high schools went to fast pitch. I remember Coach Dick Gresham out at Independence coached the Independence women's softball team, and it was slow pitch at that time, and they won consecutive state championships. I actually did the public address for their second state championship game. It was a great series. They did a three-game set. In all honesty, I don't remember who Independence played, but Independence won the first game. The visiting team won the second game. So we had the rubber match, and those last two games were all on the same day, and it was a slow pitch game. The very next year, they went to fast pitch, and it really has been a different game since then. There's a premium on catching. There's a premium on pitching. And for the young ladies who go out and become proficient as a pitcher, you know, you certainly wish them well in their career. And those are the players that are going to advance to play high school and college softball. But I personally think they ought to have two different levels of play, you know, because you're right. For a school like James Martin, for a school like Ranson, probably Northridge, Northeast, it's tough to find that pitcher because both baseball and softball have become the domain, at least at a middle school and high school level, pretty much the domain of the tournament level player. And, you know, Coach, we're starting to see more and more minority baseball players playing in nations baseball, and we're thrilled about that. But it still pretty much is a game that is dominated by the people who are willing to spend the money and commit their kids to playing baseball, not year-round, but at least 7, 8, 9 months, you know, because, I mean, I know that Nations started playing tournaments in February, and they'll go all the way into November. They might even have a tournament or two in Christmas, and if you go to states like California and Florida, they're playing baseball 12 months a year. Certain parts of Texas, they're playing 12 months a year, and you know, and so the kids who are playing baseball, you know, our kids at James Martin will play a 12-game schedule if they're lucky because, you know, I mean, they're probably going to get three games rained out this year, so they'll play a 9-game schedule. And for a lot of our kids at James Martin, Coach, those are the only 9 games they're going to play, whereas a tournament player can play as many as 9 games in 2 weekends.
Yeah, and, you know, you were talking about, you know, who gets to play tournament ball and who doesn't. I was in players, you know, the early part of the school year, you know, buying some equipment and like, okay, well, this we're still talking about which bat we're going to swing this year, that type thing. And, you know, I would love to go in there and pick out, you know, 5 or 6 bats for my school, but you know, have a bat so on sale. Was $300, and that was a bargain. You know, $300 for a bat on sale, and I said, well, you know, and that was at Players. Well, you leave Players and go over to Dick's Sports. Dick's Sports, they're $500. I'm like, did somebody make a mistake? You're telling me that this bat is $500. So a lot of our parents just find that not practical to spend $500 on a bat. And, you know, every now and then I've lucked out and I've gone in and found one at Players for $100, $130, $140, $150. And you can clearly see where it's been marked down in half. And, you know, I always shop around. And I go to Players, and sure enough, that exact same bat the Players had for $150, that bat's $300 at Dick's Sport or some of the other sporting goods stores. So a lot of it is just being priced out. When we played, Joe, you could take $500 and you could buy half the team a glove. You know, you could get enough bats for the whole season and enough baseball to last you the entire season. The game has gotten so expensive that, you know, I hate to say this, but it almost priced a lot of kids out of it, you know, playing tournament ball, because they do have to pay an entry fee to get in, and then you have to have your own equipment, and it's gotten expensive.
You know, it has, Coach, and one of the things that I'm real proud that Nations has done, and I'm talking about Nations Baseball, has done is sponsored minority teams, and I've actually spoken to a couple of groups about that, but the interesting thing, Coach, is every year I have that conversation with several individuals who tell me they'd like to put together a team, and I ask them to get up with me. And I had a conversation about 2 weeks ago with a fellow who told me that they were going to put together a team. I've not heard back from them. And so I can say that Nations Baseball does, in fact, offer a program whereby they are willing to waive the entry fees for minority teams, because it is one of their goals to encourage minority participation in baseball. And we don't want to see these kids left behind. So anybody who's listening, if you want to put together a minority baseball team, don't hesitate to call me. I can be reached at 704-517-0480. Once again, at 704-517-0480. And I'll be more than happy to talk to Nations about making sure that you have an opportunity for your kids who aren't as financially secure as some of the other folks to have an opportunity to play baseball. And you know, Coach Clark, you know Don Mason, you know what he does, you know what he stands for. And so that opportunity is out there, and we're throwing it out there for anyone who wants to pick up the phone and call me or call on this line. We'll talk about it on the air. But we do want to see more minority athletes playing baseball, because it's a great game. It's played in the summer at a time where kids aren't in school. Those teams play throughout the summer. So it really does provide an opportunity for a lot of young men to – and I can't speak for softball because Nations doesn't offer softball, but it does provide that opportunity to divert a lot of energy that could be going in the wrong direction. And, you know, so if you're out there and you want to, and Coach, if you know anybody who wants to put something together, don't hesitate to have them get up with me, and we'll talk about making that possible. And speaking of Don Mason, that's another guest I want to have on this show where we can talk about youth ball. There are a lot of issues surrounding, and Coach Clark, you know that I hang with a lot of high school coaches, and one of the concerns that they have about all this tournament ball, especially at a high school level, is the conflict between the showcase program and what's going on in the high school. And you know, as we had on our recruiting show, you know, everybody that was on that show, Phil Colasurto, Rusty Jester, Rod Smith, Ethan Horton, you know, they all, and Gary Robinson, you know, they all told us that at the end of the day, they want to know what's going on that high school. And I think that as important as tournament ball is for the development of baseball players and softball players, at the end of the day, that college recruiter and that pro scout, they want to know how these kids are going to do in school, because citizenship and being a good, solid citizen and a good person and a good student are certainly important to the universities, especially with the limited scholarship money that they have for baseball and softball. But the pros, too. The pros want to see how a kid gets off a bus. They want to see how he walks down the hall. They want to know how he reacts to going to practice every single day. They, you know, there's more to it than just being an athlete. And that brings me to our NBA subject. And I saw something, and Coach, we'll get to the playoffs in just a minute, but I saw something today that I find really interesting. You know, the Thunder's Derek Fisher was fined $5,000 by the league, or by the association, for flopping. They now have a violation called flopping. I guess that's where you fake a charge, and they're fining guys for that. Did you see that? Apparently there were two of them coming out.
I did not, but I wish I had. I know I saw some flops. I definitely saw some flops, and a couple of them, one of the players said, "I can't believe you fell for that. He just flopped." And you know, I think it's become a distraction to the game itself. You know, I saw a hard flop last night, and when they went back and showed the replay, Oh, it made him look bad because he really didn't get touched. But boy, he slammed himself to the floor. Really, dude? He slammed himself to the floor. But yeah, I think it's a distraction. I think it's a distraction to the game, and it's an attempt to deceive. And so we'll see. I think it's a good thing personally. I do.
Well, apparently Indiana's Jim Pendergraph was also fined Sunday for violating the flopping rule, and. You know, here's what I don't get about that, and again, you know I'm not the biggest basketball guy. I did coach one youth basketball team and realized pretty quick that I know about as much about coaching basketball as I do about teaching calculus, which is very little. And, you know, it seems to me, though, that if the guy falls down, all of a sudden I'm open. There's nobody in my face, and I have an open free look at the basket. So, I just don't get it. I mean, explain to me why they need a rule that says you can't fake a charge.
Because I mean, look, as an official, unless I'm at the exact perfect angle, and most of the time you're not going to be because they don't on that level they have what four out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
they got three officials.
Three on the high school level, three, but on our level, we're lucky we get two out there. So you're never going to always have the perfect angle. So if you don't have the absolute perfect angle as fast as that ball is traveling around the court, you know, if guy get a ball and do a spin move and this guy flop, unless you almost standing right there, and most of the time you're not going to be, this guy flop, you make that call. You make that call. There's a couple of people that know he's flopping, and that is that fan or that player on the bench that had that perfect angle from the sideline, or the person with the ball that know for a fact he made no contact. You know, so from an official standpoint, it's a distraction to the game. It really is. And what these players gonna have to get used to is that you might flop and you might get away with it during the game, but they're gonna go back and start reviewing every single charge they call. They're gonna go back and look at it in slow motion, and that's a part of that flop rule that it allows them to go back after the game and look at each one of those flops. So as they're recording the game, They're tagging all the charges that were called, an offensive charge. They tag every one of them, and they go back and look at each one of them, and then they levy that fine.
I got a better idea. Why don't they just do away with the offensive foul, the charge call? I mean,
well, no, they can't do that because there's some bulldozers in the league that will run up your chest if they do away with that.
Well, but there's, you know, I mean, that's, I suppose, it just –
Remind me before we get off the air, unless you want to do it now, to go back to softball for about 3 minutes.
Let's go back to softball right now for 3 minutes, and then we're going to talk about what I consider to be a flop, and that's the playoffs. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Coach.
Now, in the process of that conversation that we were having, I think from our standpoint, every year when we start the school year, and, you know, after that first AD's meeting during the summer and then the second AD's meeting we have, all of your sports have started. And softball is one of those sports. And we're in the Northern League. So in our conference, there's Bradley Middle School, Bailey Middle School, Alexander Middle School, Ranson Middle School, Coolwood Middle School, Whitewater Middle School, and James Martin Middle School. And I don't think I missed anybody. Well, you know, when we go back to the second meeting, they want to know what teams we're filling and who's not filling a team. What teams your school will not be able to fill. What do you think is the number one sport that most schools stand up and say we're not filling that team?
Let me guess. Softball.
Softball. Softball. And so we had a conversation at the AD's meeting, the early part of the school year, is that If I knew, I'm on the college level, and I knew for a fact that I wanted more kids doing fast pitch to widen my recruiting range. I want the high schools going to fast pitch. I want the middle schools going to fast pitch. None of us could remember a big push when you're making a change as drastic as that. I felt like it should have been a group effort for everybody. I felt like the colleges, the high schools, and the middle schools, all of them should have got together, and each area should have had clinic after clinic after clinic. Because even when you go up there now and you're watching, say you go over to Ranson and you talk to the Ranson coach, they, you know, nobody really knew how to pitch a fast pitch. Same thing with James Martin. Even now, when you talk to guys, I'm interested in coaching softball for your team, it is very rare that guy says, "Yeah, I know how to coach fast pitch. I know how to show the girls how to fast pitch." That's very, very rare. So I felt like if I'm on a college level and this is where the game is going, I'd have made a huge deal about it. Let's get out here. Let's do clinics, not just that year that we made that switch, but every single year, let's do clinics everywhere. Because in my opinion, and some of my AD friends, we feel like for the inner city school that's a dying sport. That is a dying sport for our school.
Well, it is a dying sport for the schools that can't compete because, and in some ways, Coach, baseball can get that way because there's nothing fun about going out and getting beat 19-22-1 or nothing. There's nothing fun for kids about that. And, you know, and in some ways, you think about, you go back to what the original goal of youth athletics, whether it's tournament, whether it's rec, whether it's middle school, junior high school, or what, at the end of the day, those are supposed to be about developing, you know, physical development and character development. And, you know, there are lessons to be learned from not being successful in athletics. And in all frankness, I do believe that we've forgotten that. You know, I was watching a special on Vince Lombardi, and if you've never seen it, the Lombardi special that HBO runs every, you know, a couple of times a year, and it something that Lombardi said that is so quoted. He said, "When in, I can't even remember what he said, but it's not, it's the only thing. Winning is the only thing." And he later said that he wished he'd never said that. He actually came back and said that what he was trying to say was that the guys who play are winners. Now, that's not what he said. Winning's not everything. It's the only thing. That's exactly what he said. And you hear that quoted. And he said that the guys who play in the league are all winners because they're doing something that so many people would love to be able to do, but they can't. And in all frankness, he just said he wished he'd never said it because I've heard coaches quote that. I've seen it on locker room walls. And you know, Ricky, losing is part of it. I mean, you know, how you handle your bad times and your failures is just as important as how you handle your successes because Lord knows in life you're going to have your share of good moments. You're going to have your share of bad moments too. And anybody can handle their successes well, yet there are a lot of people that don't. A lot of people handle their success and it goes to their head or they act like they've never been there before, and they embarrass themselves with their celebration sometimes. And, you know, I'm not a real big one for over-celebrating because at the end of the day, it's a game. But, you know, not being successful is important. I mean, and learning how to deal with that because, as you know, as I know, life is full of disappointments. Life is full of really hard times, and athletics can teach that. But at the same time, I don't know that there are a whole lot of really valuable lessons that are learned by going out and getting beat 21-22 to nothing. And I really do wish that they would find a way to create a separate league for softball for young women in the middle schools, and that's a sport that they can be competitive in and they can enjoy doing. Because, Coach, all the studies show that the women who participate in athletics are not nearly as likely to stay in abusive relationships. They're not nearly as likely to allow themselves to be abused. They're not willing to be the victims of domestic violence. They have a much higher self-esteem, and they have a greater respect for themselves. And so there are a lot of young girls and young women who would like to play softball who don't have the ability to compete at a fast pitch level. And so in some ways, I think the best way to summarize the point that you're making is that we're telling these kids that those lessons just aren't that important for them. And you know, Ricky, I think that we do need to pay more attention to our female athletes and try to encourage them to be more involved, to learn those lessons that I know you and I believe that athletics teaches to them. And softball,
yeah, and
you're right, we're missing out on that, and that's a very fair criticism. And that's not taking a thing away from the young ladies. And, you know, we've got that Charlotte Stars team that comes out to Martin, and those girls will practice. Lord, Coach, sometimes I've seen them get started at 11, and they finish at 4. So, I mean, these are very committed young women, and I'm not trying to take a thing away from what they're doing. And I certainly wouldn't want to tell them that their development isn't important. They choose to be that committed to it. So I think there's room for both. And I think that I think we just need to recognize that, not just at CMS, but all around the country, that there's a place for both. And one does not have to be mutually exclusive of the other. I think that's what you're trying to say. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. But that's how I feel about it, and I think you would agree with that.
I felt like if you're going to make a change so drastic to a game, that you also have to provide the tool, you should provide the tool for everybody to play on even ground. And the point that I'm making is that like you just said, the kids that are out there at Martin, those girls that are out there practicing softball at Martin, you know, I'm out there looking at the coaches. Any number of those guys can fast pitch. Because I see them out there when I'm driving by cutting grass or whatever. They're fast pitching to the girls and working with the girls. The problem that I think is that when you go up to Isle softball practice, or you go to Kennedy Middle School softball practice, or Ranson or MLK, there's no one there that possessed that skill, because whoever made the decision with a certain population in mind. I'm trying to be politically correct. With a certain population in mind. Well, we're not going to worry about this particular population. As long as this population has the means, then we'll go with that. I did not see, I was an AD when those changes were made, and I did not see a big push for people coming out, giving camps and nothing to help us make that transaction. And I'm telling you, every single year out of CMS 28 middle schools, every single year, at least 8 to 9 of those middle schools will not field female softball. We just won't. And, you know, we're talking about losing and winning. You have a point. I've never learned anything from winning. I was too busy celebrating. The lessons that I learned in sports was when I lost. And that lesson was that you can't turn it on and off like you turn on and off a light switch. That you will play like you practice. You will play like you practice. If you give 75% at practice, you are going to give 75% on game day. You know, that was one of the lessons that I learned. But at a very, very early age, you know, 9th, 10th grade, I also learned that coaching makes a difference. It really makes a difference. We went from my 9th grade year, I made varsity, which was almost, you know, I thought I had died and gone to heaven. but I made the varsity squad. But I, you know, I sat on the sideline and watched the same kids make the same mistakes over and over and over and over and over. So that coach did not, he did not get it. If I know that regardless of what I do, I'm going to still be in this game, I'm going to still start, yada, 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 then that's not pushing me. My sophomore year, we got a new coach. We competed for the championship, 2A championship, my sophomore year. Exact same players, different coach. And that's what I'm saying about girls softball, fast pitch, slow pitch. There's not enough people that have that skill in our community to do that. You know, you could drive in any neighborhood, and that was an open space, and kids were out there running, playing softball and kickball and football, the whole nine, especially in a city the size of Charlotte. Those areas don't exist anymore. You can't just go out to, say, Hornet's Nest and get on a softball field, because most of the time that softball field is being rented out by this particular team or this particular league or that particular league. So, again, at the end of the day, I think probably within the next 5 years, at least James Martin won't be offering softball at all. I can't speak.
I'll tell you what, let's do. You know, the great thing about this being the Coach Ricky Clark, Coach Joe Ledford show, with that player sporting good call-in guest line, 888-689-4061, the great thing about this being our show is it's our show. And I know we had both done a little research and talked about the NBA playoffs, and we can certainly do that tomorrow night. But, you know, we got about 24 minutes left on this show. Let's stay where we are with this, because this is an important subject, because I think it is, because some of the things that we're talking about are what I call real sports issues, you know. And one of the things we want to do on this show, and I appreciate the fact that we have a lot more folks listening on demand than we do live, and I get that people don't want to sit around from 8 to 9 with all the good television shows and live sporting events that we're competing against, but we do have a pretty good following going on demand. And this is the kind of thing that at the end of the day we want to do on this show, is talk about issues that are relevant, sports issues that are relevant to young people. And, you know, Coach, I want you to know, I hear what you're saying, and I agree with it. I agree with it completely. But at the same time, I'm going to tell you one of the issues that I have, and it goes back to something that I said about nations offering for minority groups to come in and play at no charge. You know, now we require everybody to have insurance. I mean, every facility that they play at expects each team to have insurance. You know, but Coach, I'll just be honest with you. Last year, nations put on, and some of the exact same issues that exist in softball exist in baseball, and there's a disparity in high school baseball and middle school baseball between pretty much the same schools that you were talking about in our conference. But when, you know, my son Patrick and I were coaching the JV team at Vance, and they didn't have a JV program until we went up there, and, you know, Coach Engel decided to put one in place. And Vance baseball has gotten better, but, you know, Ricky, a lot of those games were not competitive. They got pretty lopsided. I'll tell you, the kids played pretty hard. But Ricky, I'll just tell you, last year Nations put on a tournament, an Easter tournament, for the schools that weren't as competitive in their conference for baseball. What we did is we invited all those schools, four or five of them, actually invited six, to come and play over their spring break and give an opportunity to play a minimum of two or three games, maybe more if we had more participation. And, Coach, the participation just wasn't there. But, you know, four teams came. They did play in the tournament. And I went out of my way to say something to the coaches, each of those teams: put together a summer program. We will let you play. And Ricky, they just didn't do it. I didn't get a single taker out of that. And so, you know, if the opportunity is going to be there where it becomes affordable, And people need to take advantage of that if they're serious about saying, if they really want to talk about equity and say it's not fair that we have to compete against these teams where kids are playing, you know, 80 to 100 games. You know, I guaranteed each one of these teams upwards 28, 30, 32, 36 games in the summer that they didn't have to pay for. All they had to do was pay for their uniforms, their insurance, which is, you know, I'm talking, you can outfit a baseball player in a uniform at Player Sporting Goods or anywhere for under $20 a kid. I mean, you know, you see what the kids are wearing in tournaments. The days of the high-dollar uniform, some teams come out, but for the most part, a lot of these teams are wearing a gray pair of pants and a T-shirt that's been printed. It's not that expensive. And you know, Coach, I've been frankly disappointed that I've not had more takers.
Willing
to put those teams on the field. And, you know, speaking on behalf of nations, you know, people say we need more diversity in the game, and we do. But what more can we do if you know,
this is my take on baseball. A lot of the baseball that's played out there at Martin on the weekend, a lot of that baseball is daddy ball. I experienced the exact same thing with football. We get a blue chip running back over there, or a quarterback, or wide receiver, or corner, or whatever. That kid's dad will volunteer to help us coach. So his kid played for me 2 years. I got this coach for 2 years. After those 2 years, I've been doing this 28 years. Only out of the 28 years that I've been doing it, only two of those dads stuck around as that kid leaving us going on to high school. And that was George Griffin, who stuck around another 10 years after his boy Gerard went on through Vance and West Charlotte and later went on a football scholarship to Hampton. So George was one of them. My hat's off to George. And Jurian Jordan's dad, Q, Coach Q, stuck around a couple of years after Jurian went through. But eventually Coach Q fell off before Jordan. I think Jordan's junior year, he didn't help us pass Jordan. Jordan started as a junior. So a lot of that is daddy ball. And, you know, with baseball, when you have a select team playing or a tournament team playing, almost all of those kids are decent baseball players. So you got decent baseball players. They just didn't become decent. They're decent baseball players because their dad or uncle or somebody spent time with them getting them that way, or a coach spent time with them getting them that way. So there's always someone in the picture to get you better. In our community, baseball is not as big as it should be. And again, that goes back to, even if I can put a kid in a uniform for $20, I certainly can't go get a glove for $20. I certainly can't go get a pair of baseball cleats for $20. I certainly, absolutely, 100% cannot go get a bat for under $100. And you remember yourself that time I caught myself getting a good deal on some bats. I think I paid $99 for those bats. After the first game, it looked like somebody had been beating them up against a rock. I had never been so disappointed in my life because I thought I got a good deal. So it really at times it comes down to dollars and cents, but also, you know, I know football. So I can teach my son football. I know basketball. I can teach my son basketball. I can't teach my son baseball because, you know, like you said, I never saw a pitch I didn't like. So I take a cut at everything. A lot of it boils down to what we did when we came up. So if you go back and you start looking, well, what did you play when you were in high school, Joe?
I played football, but not very well.
Where did you get your baseball experience from?
Church, when I was playing, there were two levels of baseball. You had Little League and Pony League. and then you had church ball, and I played church ball, baseball.
But okay,
coach,
so
before that,
what does Patrick play? What does Patrick play? Your son?
Patrick played soccer, a sport I know nothing about, and I mean, as far as coaching, I mean, because there's a skill set that goes to soccer that I'm just not familiar with, and he played baseball. But the truth of the matter is, coach, the things that I taught Patrick in baseball, I learned myself. I learned as a baseball coach, because my baseball coaching really began when I was 16 years old. See, I've been coaching since I was 16. Solid. And so, you know, I'm finishing my 41st year of having done it. But I'll tell you, coach, I did not know. And in all candor, I didn't play. I played football my 8th grade year, my 9th grade year, and 5 games into my sophomore year, and then the broken wrist and the concussion that I had kind of put me out of football. So I will tell you, I learned to coach the game by, frankly, going and finding people that knew a heck of a lot more about it than I did and asking them and just getting out on the field and doing it. So, you know, the things that I taught Patrick and all the other kids that played, you know, from Mallard Creek Tar Heel, you know, Ricky, those were things that I had picked up over the years. So I'm not the guy who, you know, my father wasn't an athlete. He absolutely, you know, he came from a generation. He was a pretty good baseball player in high school, but, you know, they played about 10 games a year, and that was it. You know, so I did not come from a big sports family. And so what I wanted to, for me to become a coach, I had to go out and learn the things that I needed to know to be able to successfully coach my children and other people's children. And I coached a long time before I coached my own kids, and have coached a pretty good while since I coached. It's been 9 years since I've coached one of my children.
And yeah, but don't you think that you had the means? You had the means to do that on your own for your kids, or you had the means to hire somebody to do it, or through your business connections. Lord knows you know a lot of people.
That's
through
right.
Your business connections, I just feel like you know somebody that can almost get anything done. You know somebody from Airy Junior. And a lot of times, you know, you had the means to say, you know, I don't know how to throw a knuckleball, but you know what? I know somebody that do. Let me get over here. Let me make a phone call. Those type things. And again, it goes back to, you know, how you grew up. And you know, we're hopping on softball, but I'm pretty sure that there are people that feel the same way about James Martin when our football team get off the bus. You know, when our basketball team get off the bus, oh God. You know, here comes James Martin's basketball team. Here comes James Martin's football team. Here comes James Martin's track team. You know, because
sure,
we certainly
that.
Feel
those
that way when they're a softball team, when other schools' softball team get off.
That's exactly correct, Coach, because for the most part, the very schools that we talked about that are that give us a really hard time in baseball and softball and golf,
soccer,
and volleyball, soccer. The truth of the matter is, they have a real tough time competing with us in, you know, the sports where, frankly, your minority athlete tends to excel. I mean, if you want to get right down to it, you look at who's beaten us. We lost to Bailey. Mark May did a great coaching job that day that Bailey beat us. Okay, just did. You know, we lost to Piedmont. Piedmont had a very similar talent pool that we did, and you know, so we lost to them. Ridge Road beat us on a Hail Mary, if you remember that broke the nine-year winning streak. And then we also lost to Coolwood that year, and in each one of those games, I felt like we were, you know, but with the exception of the Ridge Road game where we got beat on the Hail Mary, I felt like we were just outgunned those days. And so, you know, the reality is, I mean, have we ever lost to Bradley in football? Have we've lost no. Bailey once?
I don't think so.
And so when we talk about, you know, a level playing field, if you get right down to it, you know, and okay, coaching has something to do with it. And in all frankness, I will tell anybody, you know, we scout in football, as you know, and we figure out what other teams are going to do. We put in their offense and their defense on Fridays, while a lot of these teams aren't even practicing on Fridays. And we'd like to think by Wednesday, our seventh grade team is going to be efficiently running their offense and their defense as a scout team against our first units.
Yeah. Don't you think that still goes right back to what I was saying earlier? It's the things that we have access to. It really is. Because we have access to basketball courts. You know, in the inner city, you have access to basketball courts. That's if your kid want to play basketball, I'll guarantee you there's an empty basketball court within 3 miles of your house. We have access to basketball courts. You don't need access to a track to run fast. All you need is access to the street. So, again, you know, football is basically speed. You know, so, you know, we'll get out there and play. We'll play two-hand tag football out there in the street. We'll play, you know, there's basketball courts everywhere. But when it comes down to softball, soccer and baseball, you know, the minority schools, our population, we just don't have access to soccer fields and softball fields and baseball fields. We just don't, because they're not building them in the inner city. We just came from over to Bradley last week. We ran over there last Thursday, and we parked a bus at a park that they built beside Bradley Middle School. And while we're out there running the track meet, one of my kids brought it to my attention. He says, "Coach Clark, look right there." I'm looking, and I was like, "What? You know, what are you talking about?" There were 1, 2, 3, 4 soccer fields. All of them were light.
Actually, there are six.
Six.
I know exactly what you're talking about. But, Coach, let me ask you this on that point then. If that's the case, then why does it matter whether we play slow pitch or fast pitch?
It matters whether we play slow pitch or fast pitch, because the schools that are good at it have access. Stay with me now.
Okay,
Bradley Middle School. Okay? Over there on that soccer field, six soccer fields, all with lights. I saw kids that looked like they couldn't have been a day over 4 or 5 years old out there. And one of my students said, that right there is why we struggle to compete with them. Right there. Because every field, packed. You go up to Bailey Middle School, it's the exact same situation. Soccer fields, softball fields, they have access to that stuff. The things that the minority students excel in sports wise are things that we have access to. And I can't think of any place in the inner city where they've built 4 soccer fields and 3 softball fields and put lights on all of them. I cannot think of one place. I just can't. Yet I can sit there and name 2 schools in our conference. 2, not 1, 2 schools in our conference. When you add those 2 the facilities together, you got over a dozen soccer fields with lights. You got a little under 8 softball fields with lights. That's just in our conference. We ain't even talking about South Charlotte. Let's not even go there. Let's not even start, because if we start talking about South Charlotte, I will guarantee you the number of soccer fields with lights and all that stuff will double what we have up in the northern end of the county. All I'm saying, and I'm not trying to start anything, is that that the minority schools, if I'm the only one that see it, there's something wrong. That the things that we're not competing in, eventually we will not offer those things.
Coach, so to
you're,
me,
going, you're going
to
end, you're going to end up with, really, you're going to end up with, when we set that to do our schedule, you're going to end up with Bailey, Bradley, maybe Ranson, maybe Martin, maybe Alexander, you know, maybe Coolwood filling a team here and there. But it's going to be hard to form a schedule if we don't have the tools. We have the kids that have come out, but we don't have the tools. And I feel like, personally, I feel like you can teach me to throw a fastball or a curveball a lot easier than you can teach me the fast pitch. It just looked like something that would take my arm right out of socket.
Amazingly, it would not.
It looks like it.
I think if you take this, and in the few minutes we got left, if you take this a little bit further, it is the real reason why I'm opposed to the privatization of middle school athletics, for the very reasons that you've spoken out about tonight. And I'm not, you know, and I'm not going to tell you that I agree with everything you've said, just like you don't agree with everything that I've said. But what I will tell you is that, see, because I think that the very reasons you said it, you know, the lack of inner city facilities and whatnot, the truth of the matter is, that being so, I don't think it matters whether you play slow pitch or fast pitch, because the glove still costs what the glove, the shoes cost what the shoes cost, that kind of thing. So I, that's where, to me, the reason I think that we need to go to slow pitch at the schools that would be competitive or more competitive at a slow pitch level, I lay it right there. But Ricky, if you take a look in some of the surrounding counties where they do not offer middle school athletics as part of the school program, but through a co-op with an Optimist Club, a Lions Club, or a Booster Club or something like that, you do get daddy ball. And the one thing I can say about school ball, and there's a lot we could do to improve our product, but at the same time, at least we're not daddy balling it. At least we are making the decision on the basis of who the best athlete is for what our needs are, instead of it being one of the coach's kids. And that has always been and will always be one of the criticisms of sports.
Because didn't you cut one of the coach's kids this year?
I absolutely did not. He did not try out of my position.
You did. Yes, you did.
No, he tried out for tight end.
You didn't realize it was
the
coach's kid.
Now, Coach, he tried out for tight end. As a matter of fact, I was pretty upset when I found out that we had cut a coach's kid.
Oh, see, I thought he went over to play line.
Nope.
No, he tried out for tight end. So who cut that kid over there?
Tight end, don't lay that at my feet. That was a rookie coach's decision. But at the same time, I did not know that he was trying out. Now, some people would say that should not matter. You better believe it should matter.
Yeah, we're not gonna look. We don't have to play him, but we certainly not gonna cut one of our coaches' kids. That you know, we make pennies an hour anyway.
That's
he's
right.
out there devoting his time trying to improve the program.
Coaches,
yeah, I talked to his dad after that. I was like, he didn't come over with me. And
tried out for tight end, and to be honest with you, I didn't recognize the kid, and that's I hate that for him, but you know I hate that for us too, because at the end of the day I do believe in looking out for other coaches' kids.
Oh, you bet, yeah, and as we should, it won't happen again.
Well, folks, let me tell you, we're down to about 30 seconds on this show. This is the Coach Joe Lefford, Coach Ricky Clark. Now tomorrow night, Ricky, I'll be happy to revisit this, or we can talk about that flop.
We'll talk about the NBA, because I'm sitting in now. The Knicks and the Pacers are in a dogfight here. But,
well,
Joe, remind me tomorrow night talk about Steph Curry. Oh, my goodness. I don't know if you stayed up to watch it. But Joe, I'm telling you, Michael Jordan-type basketball last night. This kid is good. He's good.
He is good. This is WDCU, Daniel Clark, Let's Talk Radio, and we'll see you tomorrow night at 8 o'clock.